Olin, and savvy regards to the staff at Nemata. It's the 26th of May, 2022. Yeah, something like that. And I'm recording this under somewhat unusual conditions. But it was just too good to be true, and I couldn't resist. So I'll see how it comes out. So I'm sitting in a 4-star hotel in what is said to be the most beautiful village in Galicia, in the eastern part of the province of Galicia. And the village is called Arariz. And it's about an hour, a little more than an hour from the bunker where I usually reside. So I thought I'd relate a personal anecdote, which appears to be deeply and intricately interwoven with Gnostic intel. As a lead-in, I'll refer back to a conversation I had on the terrace of the bunker, Hag House, probably 10 days ago. So, Kerdwin and I were sitting there, looking out at the moon of this Budevi Tara shift, which was then just past the first quarter. And we both noticed that the moon, the shape of the moon, was odd, really odd. So, of course, when it's at the first quarter and when it's at the last quarter, you have what is called the half moon. See, the quarter refers to the quarter of the lunar cycle, and the half moon refers, which is a temporal measurement, 7 days, 21 days. But the half moon refers to, of course, the visual impression of the moon in its quarter stage. And of course, you've seen it many times, and has a straight edge on the left in the first quarter and a straight edge on the right side in the waning quarter or completion, the last 7 days of the shift. So it was a 2-3 days after the first quarter, and we noticed that the lower left-hand corner of the moon was square. I think Kerdwin did a forum post on this, describing this event in detail. Now, there were a number of remarkable aspects to this conversation. But first of all, it was remarkable that I could see what she was seeing. Because generally, for over 2 years now, when I look at the moon, I see 3 or 4 moons. And for some reason, that evening, as the moon was rising, we were looking a little south of east. And it was not at the meridian, of course, which is due south, but it was rising at a fairly low angle. And I could see it perfectly well at that moment, which is odd. So we concurred on what we were seeing, and that was the lower right-hand corner of the moon looked as if it had been carved at a right angle. I says, what is this right angle doing on the moon, on the body of the moon? And it so happened that as we were observing this event, I initiated a conversation about cosmic projection. So I proposed this reference in the future, the cosmic projector is a device illustrated in the theme of the 36 tapas. And one of the Sanskrit words, there's also one or two Greek words, that apply to cosmic projection is parinama. So let's call it the cosmic projector, or parinama, which means the cosmic projection process, that is to say, emanation. So I brought up the topic of the parinama. And the background of what I said in the ensuing 30 minutes or so was coming out of reflections that I've had over the past few weeks about the parinama. What I presented on cosmic projection in Dogsen is not particularly coherent or complete. I did it in a state of compulsive excitement, and there's more to be said, and the entire scheme merits a closer and more skillful presentation. So as you know, I have quite a few things on my mind, and I thought, when the fuck do I get around to this? I will one day. And as I'm holding on, as my Rigpa is, retaining and working on that material, as Rigpa does, my Rigpa feeds me reports on how it is developing the intel regarding the parinama. And so I sat down in this conversation. I thought, I think I'll just run out verbally some of the things that I've been receiving, some of the things that I now understand, the insights I've been having, the growing and continuing elucidation of the parinama. It's about 1 in the afternoon here, by the way. Brilliantly warm, lovely day. Perfectly blue sky. This hotel is super elegant and not very expensive for a 4-star. And decor is stunning. It's taupe. And what is the color of these drapes? Man, I can see these drapes so well. I can see everything so well. And just poured myself a gin and tonic. And I'll tell you why I'm here, although you might already have guessed. So anyway, I started a conversation. First, we're looking at this moon, and we're saying, how can that be? And then I started the conversation, and I can't remember in any linear way, of course. This is what I was getting at. The booth side and the theater side is, in my humble opinion, one of the most brilliant pieces of Gnostic intel that has come through in school. And of course, it clears up so many things, and it allows me to, or Lama Lovemut, if he can tear himself away from one of his Japanese groupies, to just describe and explain in an extraordinary manner something that's never been explained before. So the cosmic projector of the 36 tapas is the complete system, booth side and theater side. And as you will know by now, the division in the parinama is the wall, the vertical wall, at the back of the theater. and there's a rectangular slot in the wall. This is the way it used to be in theaters. So the projection booth is behind the wall, and there is the projector, the light and power source, the two reels, the sprockets, and there's a complex assembly of lenses. This is what the 36 Tapas are on the booth side. Just think of one of those cameras, for instance, that is used by nature photographers. So you have first the body of the camera, be it a Canon or Zeiss, and then you have that long cylindrical lens. It's like a long nozzle, and that is inherent to the structure of the cosmic projector. So what do each of these lenses do? Well, it's possible, actually, you know, to know exactly what they do and to know what happens on booth side up until you come to the round glass lens at the end of the projector, which is called manas, right? And so the way that I picture it is that that round glass lens protrudes just a little bit from the wall. It protrudes a little outside of the projection booth. So if you stop looking at the screen and you turn back and look over your shoulder, if you've ever done this in a movie theater, if you're young enough or old enough to ever have been in a movie theater of this kind, you know that what you see is just a circle, a glassy, hard, bright, white light with some light streaming from it, which is obviously going to the screen and projecting the film on the screen. So that is the manas lens. And then the construction of the projector consists of all these other parts, which I'm not going to go into. I'm just going to go into one part. And I've been wondering about this part for a long time. As my Rigpa is working on the description of the Parinama, my attention would continually go back to this one lens. It's part of the extension of the lens. There are about, let me count, I'm not looking at the diagram now, but I think there are about one in five kanchikas, six. There are about nine parts in the construction of the nozzle lens, considered from its base. So, you know, when you have a body camera, you have just the camera itself, and then you have this very long projector lens, zoom lens, and you hold the zoom lens in one hand and you lock it into the camera. From that point where you lock the lens into the camera, at that base, there are actually nine aperture lens adjustment filtering devices in the cosmic projector. And each of them has a very specific function, and you can experience what these functions are. You can actually experience them directly once you have the description of what they are. You can actually experience how the cosmic projector is operating in real time, and that you are both an effect of its operation, and you are an observer of its operation. So you're in the audience, right? Looking at the flat vertical screen, which is parallel to the rear wall of the theater. There are two flat vertical surfaces. And you're looking at that, and you're looking at the ultimate result of the Parinama, which is the film that's being projected on the screen. But bear in mind, there's a slight modification in this metaphor, which is a wonderful thing to remember. In cosmic projection, the audience sitting in the theater watching the movie are also in the movie. So the movie resulting from cosmic projection is not merely the action on the screen, the motion pictures and the sound, but the audience is also projected into the theater where the movie is running, you see. So, but you and the audience can actually know how this happens. And I feel confident in saying that the more this subject comes to our attention, and as we study it and review it over time, I don't know where you can go with this, but I would say you can go pretty far with this particular intel on the Parinama. So I said to Caradwen, you know, this one lens that I can't reckon what it is. When I scan over the parts of the projector on the booth side, yeah, pretty much get what these parts are. And they are very similar. They can be overlaid. And I was at the point of doing this with the help of Lama Lovma, but again, he got distracted and I couldn't do it by myself. I was at the point of doing a diagram, which is an overlay of a holographic machine with a cosmic projector, because they are parallel. They're like, you can use a holographic machine, which uses a laser, to describe the piece by piece the parts of the mechanism of the projector. It's pretty wild. However, there is again another wonderful distinction, which is that there are actually two holographic machines. One holographic machine is the one that creates a holographic plate, which is like a photographic plate with special properties, and it's a fractal plate. So if you have, say, the example of a wine bottle, and you use holographic device one to create a plate that carries the replication of the wine bottle. And that plate has a fractal structure, meaning that if you break it, the entire image of the wine bottle can still be reproduced from that piece of that plate, although not as clearly and in such precise detail as when you use the entire plate. So fractality is implied. And when it comes around to the fractalization of the Parinama, this is obliterating. And I'm getting to see how that works. The scalar and fractal properties of the Parinama. But anyway, holographic device one is what you require to create the holographic plate. And you also require the original object. So you've got a wine bottle. You put it inside this device and it imprints the photographic plate. Then you use holographic device two to project the image on that plate into a hologram of a wine bottle, you see? So there are actually two devices, but in the Parinama, both these devices are combined into one device. And I've said before, and you can never say this enough, and you can never forget it, oddly, It's interesting, isn't it? Can never forget it the first time you hear it. Nor can you ever say it enough, that the cosmic projector both shoots and plays the film at the same time, right? So when they're making a movie, they shoot the movie in different scenes, then they edit the film, do post-production, whatever. Then they play the movie through a projector. So there's a difference between shooting the film and running the film. But with the cosmic projector, there's no difference. It shoots and runs at the same time. Also, the two devices that I just described are combined into a single device. It's pretty wild, isn't it? So when talking about this and setting up the conversation, and I said, it came up that in a couple of weeks I was going to go to Orense for a treatment of my eye, my right eye, the beady eye, right? And I was musing and I said, yeah, I'm going to Orense. I'm actually 20 minutes outside of Orense because I couldn't get a hotel in town. Couldn't have done better than this one. And I'm saying, yeah, Orense, what does Orense mean? Orense. So, you know, or, it's O-U-R-E-N-S-E, but or, O-U-R-A-U-R, means aura, light, radiance, emanation. And N, E-N, or E-N-S, is actually a Greek word, ens. It's part of the word ennoia, and it means will or intention. Ens is will. So it's the will, it's the place of the will, of the aura, of the will to see. So I came to the place of the will to see in order to have a treatment for my right eye to remove this, what do they call it? Oddly, the same thing as they call the waterfalls of the Upper Nile, cataracts. So the cataracts of the Nile. So what is it? It's a crystallization in the aqueous lens, is that what it's called, of the eye. So I'm going to the place Orense, the will to see, to do this. It seems quite appropriate. Orense, Orense. And I said, and it's really odd because this is what I've been contemplating, this treatment I'm going to have, in an odd sort of way, is apposite to what I've been contemplating about this part of the lens, which is behind Manas. So the Buddhists go as far as the hard, white, cold, glassy light at the end of the lens, the zoom lens. But just behind that, there are two other massive lenses. And behind that, there's a massive projection, there's a massive construction of an internal lens and five different apertures, five different adjustment devices, which are called the five kanchikas. So I said, wow. So the three, and I've done a detail of this, which I'll include with this unit, the three of immediate interest in this conversation were Manas at the border of the wall of the projection booth. Just behind Manas, a lens called Ahamkara. And just behind that, a lens called Buddhi. So you have a triple structure coming forward. Buddhi, Ahamkara, and Manas. And I pretty much knew, intuited, what all these parts of the cosmic projector are doing. But I couldn't get anything on Ahamkara until this conversation and until the time came when I knew I would be going to have this treatment. And so I said to Caradwin, well, you know, aham is a common expression in Sanskrit. Aham idam. You hear this constantly. And what it really means is the I, aham, and that, idam, that which it sees, the I and the that, the subject and the object, the noesis and the noema, according to the phenomenological formula of Franz Brentano. So, the I and the that, the subject and the object. So, it's called Ahamkara. So, the word I, the singular letter I, which in English is the subjective, is contained in the name of this lens, the technical description of this lens. These technical descriptions are unique. They cannot be found anywhere else except in Hindu Tantra, Vidya, and also in Kashmiri Shaivism, to which I will have occasion to refer in the future. So, it's the I lens, I hyphen what? I hyphen Kara. And so, just talking this out, it all comes out very smoothly and just naturally, pondering or thinking about anything. And I said, I think I can define it now quite precisely what it is. First, though, I want to point out that in the course of this conversation, and often when I talk, I am acutely aware that I do speak the English language. And I must say, I can't help it. And it's just the way it is. But there's no other way that this high-end Gnostic intel can come into the world with the exquisite definition it's getting, except in the English language. So I do feel for those who are not native English speakers, and even for some of you who are, I know that the syntax I use would test your linguistic and neuro-linguistic capacities to the utmost. But it so happens that, you know, ojo is I in Spanish, and yo is the word for I. And it's not the same word. Je is I in French, and œil is the word for I, and it's not the same word. But in English, the word for I to designate the subject is the same as the word I, E-Y-E. And so I said to Caradwin, yeah, that's the exact technical term in the manual of the 36 tattvas for Ahamkara. It is the eye enhancement lens. I, single letter, is the eye enhancement lens. And I said to him, we were both laughing. I said, isn't it amazing that I would come to that term? No one has ever used this term, by the way. Go read about Ahamkara. There's a lot about it. And there are a lot of sites that give you a description of the cosmic projector of the 36 tattvas, but you won't find anyone saying that the Ahamkara is the eye enhancement lens. And so we both laugh, because what's happening to me, what's happening to the main professor, is that he's going to Orense to have a treatment which involves the installment of an eye enhancement lens. And there's perfect convergence at that moment between what the professor is experiencing in a real world situation where his vision has been impaired for 3 years, and the Gnostic intel. It's as if you can't tell the difference between what applies to the Gnostic intel and what applies to the treatment that I was due to undergo, and which I have just undergone yesterday. And I had to look around for this, and thanks also to Rocky for helping me with this enormously, because she found a Spanish doctor who happens to be an hour away from home. So you can hear or see a lot about removal of cataracts on the internet, and they talk about laser surgery, laser technique. My friend had this done, my best friend Chantal, and it was a terrible experience, which resulted 3 days later in her having a cerebral seizure. And I can't do anesthetic. I'm not sure if I would ever come back from anesthetic. So I thought, it's out of the question. I can't do it. And I found out that they do it with ultrasound. So with ultrasound, they use sound, not a laser, to make a tiny puncture, which is about 1.5 millimeters large, compared to the cut they make with a laser, which is, I think, 9 or 10 millimeters large. So they make a hole in your eye, which is 1/10 the size. And then they use the ultrasound to break up the crystallized matter. Then they suck it out with a vacuum cleaner of some kind. And then they put in a liquid or gel lens, which is calibrated precisely, because they have to take these precise measurements so that you get a lens, because the lens has to be optimal for you if you see better close, or if you see better far away, or vice versa. The lens adapts that function of seeing in depth to its optimal condition, and I certainly have that, and I had it instantly. You know, they told me in the office they were a bit surprised, because they always say, well, you won't be able to see anything the first day. This treatment takes about 15 minutes. They drop analgesic gel into your eye. You don't have to have an anesthetic, a local anesthetic. You should feel absolutely nothing. Nothing whatsoever. You can hear the high, high, tiny pitch of the ultrasound machine. And you can sort of feel a motion around your eye. And it takes 15 minutes, you know. So after the treatment was done, completely painless, without any stress, the assistant comes over and takes my hand and lifts me up, because you lie flat. The only thing they do is they constrain your head. They use a tape to around your forehead to tape your head down so you don't move. And then they put something in your eye to keep it open, but you don't even feel that, because by the time they put that in, your eye is numb. So he lifts me up. I stand up and I can instantly see the entire room. I can see everybody in it. I can see the outlines of the devices, the ultrasound device. I can see the chairs, see the doorway. I can see the faces of the people the moment I sat up. and was needless to say, quite thrilled upon receiving my eye enhancement lens. So back to the conversation on the terrace. This is a preview of further elucidation of the Parinama. So I said to Caradhuni, you know, I've often said that there is no gradient of awareness. This is the second principle of Maha, what is it called? Gin and tonic kicking in. It's called Mayavada Vedanta, right? Mayavada Vedanta, which is a dualistic system. So the second principle is there is no gradient of awareness. So I've often said that the aeons in the Pleroma observe what you are doing with the same awareness that you observe it. So when you're driving a car, when you're tying your shoes, when you're in a museum looking at sculptures and pictures on the wall, you are observing in a state of awareness. And they have the same awareness. There is no gradient. Now, there are scales. So I will explain the framing, the wonderful, magnificent, infinitely glorious process of Mahamaya, which establishes the beauteous form of the self. So there is a lens, there is a feature of the cosmic projector that frames everything. That's called Mahamaya. And so they don't see in the same frame as you, but they see with the same power of observation that you have, you see? And I said, but now I have to qualify this by adding a little detail. We're sitting here on the terrace, or I'm sitting here in this hotel room, which is very chic, and I'm leaning across the room at a counter with a big television screen, which I never put on, and a lamp. There's a bottle of Solan de Cabras there, the best water I have ever drunk. And I'm observing that, and the aeons are observing it with the same awareness as I, but they do not see it in exactly the same way. Due to the position of the human animal in the event of cosmic projection, due to the position of the human animal in the event of cosmic projection, which is in real time and ongoing, the Parinama inserts a factor that the aeons do not have. Although you observe with the same power of awareness as they do, and vice versa, they don't see exactly what you see. They don't see it exactly how you see it. See, the way that you see it, how you see it, right now myself, is that I see the room, I observe everything, and I know myself to be a subject observing the room. That's aham. I am aham. I am not merely observing the room in some kind of mindless way, but I am acutely aware that the awareness of being a subject observing the room is inherent to my observation of the room. But with the aeons, there is no subject present. You see, the subject, the presence of the subject right now, the presence of your subject in what you observe is due to the insertion of the eye enhancement lens. But when the aeons look through the cosmic projection device, that factor is absent. Now try to imagine what that implies. I'll give you a moment to think about it. Reflect on that. I'll give you a little hint. Have you ever had amnesia or aphasia? Now, I've had both. I had aphasia first when I was 17 in college at the University of Maine in the winter, around the time JFK was assassinated. It was mild. I had total aphasia in August of 2008 during that event when Jean and I took super high dose of LSD and we went to the originator and we saw that black monolith. We had total aphasia for I don't know how long. It's impossible to compute time. Could have been half an hour. It could have been 2 hours. And I had amnesia once, twice actually, when I was in India. Once was up in Nepal when I arrived at Pokhara. And I was sitting on the steps of this little building looking out at the lake Pewetal and looking off to my right at the Himalayas, Annapurna, Machu Picchu. And I had complete amnesia. And I couldn't remember where I was, how I got there, who I was. I couldn't remember what I was seeing or anything. That's kind of an approximation to what the aeons observe with and in your observation due to the fact that for them, the ahamkara lens is absent. So they don't see you, wherever you are right now, sitting wherever you are, listening to this, looking at the room around you. They don't see you as a subject observing what's there. Idam. That which is there. They just see the scene with no subject. Can you get that? Now that's a lot to take in. And there are some powerful inferences that come up immediately. Rigpa brings up some really powerful what ifs, how come, you know, Rigpa cueing to these various inferences. And I'd like to talk about that more soon. So I'm going to end this talk at this moment or shortly. But I just wanted you to know, let it be recorded in the annals of Planetary Tantra, that when the main professor went for this treatment, ultrasound removal of a cataract, at the moment of that event, and I haven't even told you yet what happened during the event and subsequently, that's the next episode. At the moment at the event leading up to it, there came the Gnostic intel that bizarrely corresponds exactly to the treatment to be undertaken. I can't see any difference. There's no difference between my personal experience of going through this treatment and the high-end Gnostic intel about the Parinama that came at the same time. So, there it is. I invite you to reflect with wonderment, as I do, on the convergence of this event with this intel on the Parinama. Now, I can't sign off. I can't sign off with the old GNE trope of Long John Silver. Ah, me mates. X marks the spot. There be treasure. But I can't give you the pirate's squint anymore, my friends, because the right eye, the booty eye of good fortune, is vivid, perfect, and impeccable. And it's just like being on LS fucking D.